Last night, at 2300, two UH-60 Black Hawk gunships lit the target with over 8,000 rounds. During the sweep, one of the Deltas found something else.
I'm an American.
Marine Sergeant Nicholas Brody, MIA since early 2003 and presumed dead. Until now.
What were his exact words?
An American prisoner of war has been turned.
You're suggesting that Abenazir planted intelligence on his own safe house just so we could recover Sergeant Brody.
If he is a terrorist, we need eyes and ears on Brody from the minute he steps off that plane.
But out of the question.
You think for 1 minute you get away with this?
I thought that once I had some proof.
Yeah, even suggesting that Sergeant Brody's what you think he is.
Sergeant Brody, it's an honor.
If somebody's trying to make contact with Brody, it'll only happen once.
Do you know who this man is?
No, I never met him.
I'm just making sure we don't get hit again.
On behalf of the President of the United States, it is my privilege to welcome you home.
Host with the most, Tara Jabari is back in the studio.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm your host,
thank you
Soli.
For coming back.
Anytime. We were just talking about all numerous other books and movies and shows
yeah.
we could bring up at another occasion, long overdue, and just finally said, you know what? Let's talk about a show that mirrors a lot of today's events,
yeah,
in an implausible fashion, as you do. Oh, we are talking about the remake of the Israeli TV show Prisoners of War. We are talking about the 8-season Showtime epic Homeland.
Yes.
Oh.
Cue the jazz.
Yeah, that catchy jazz music.
Oh yeah, and I never finished Prisoners of War. Did you ever watch that show?
I kept trying, and then it kept getting pulled from every other site, and then I had to scourge the depths of the internet to find it, and then it kept getting pulled from there. This the internet took this prisoner.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I know I saw like the half of the first season, and it's good.
Yeah.
Similarly, you kind of keep guessing, just like in Homeland. Especially in the first season. But I wanted to know what happens next. And then I kind of got pulled out of, I don't even know how I was watching it, but it's been a few years. But I mean, Homeland Showtime is easy to access and it's still a pretty decent show. It gets a little kooky, but.
Well, and it's funny how some site, I bought the DVD of this first season, never watched it. And then finally, like all of it was on Showtime. Or not Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And the last season was on my cable, you know, Spectrum package. And I was like, okay, well, it's better time than never to get into this. And
yeah.
It's just so interesting how, as we were talking off air, like a lot of people, I even talked to some other filmmakers in the industry, and some of them were just like, yeah, we watched the first two or three seasons, and then when a key character died, we stopped watching. I'm like,
that was stupid. It got better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, someone had to die because it's
yes.
a big allusion to world peace. Someone has to go in the prisoner chamber.
That was one of my thoughts that I was going to share with you when. So spoilers ahead, if you haven't
spoiler,
watched
spoiler,
Homeland.
Spoiler. You've been warned. Spoiler,
three,
spoiler.
Two, one.
Impossible to not talk about without spoilers.
When I always thought, okay, so they Brody, is he has he been turned? Has he had? Did he not? All sorts of stuff. And then I was like, oh, I see what they're going to try and do. They're going to try and make him vice president. Then one of the seasons will be them killing the president,
mm-hmm.
and he becomes president. But that didn't happen.
They used something similar kind of on the later part of the first season, Designated Survivor, but I know what you mean. I was kind of thinking
right?
maybe he'll run as president because he's kicking all these other politicians' ass. Yeah. He's using the Patriot card. He's brainwashed.
Exactly. Yeah. And
he's good at covering his tracks because if there's anything any Marine is good at, it's covering their trail, making sure they never left their locker room.
But then when they did kill him off in Iran, of all places, I was like, oh, that's not good. Then people were like, well, what are we going to do next? And it was kind of, I was still up for it because I always like spy stuff. And same. I thought it's still pretty. The fourth one, is that the one?
Fourth season.
When she's in Pakistan? No, she's in.
In season five, she goes to Beirut, Lebanon. And I think season three, she was on the base. Let's see. What?
Pakistan. You had a great write up because it's so hard to keep track of this thing.
And you got to pretty much do it while you're doing the show.
This is what I'm thinking of. Carrie has to, she's the chief in Pakistan.
You're right. Yeah.
And it has one of the best episodes, which is the 12, what is it like? Where?
Like 12 suspects are going after, I think.
Going into the US embassy.
That's what it was. You're right. And
yeah, and one of the main characters dies.
Oh, absolutely.
My main characters. And I remember I was at a sort of like a mini family reunion kind of thing, and it was so boring. My mom and I just went to the hotel room, ordered room service, and watched that episode because it was the newest episode.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, oh, we're not leaving this hotel room. What the hell just happened? And I always think of it at that point. I'm like, that was the best thing that happened during that stupid trip.
There you go, man. A highlight.
But it showed
from Ghost of Mississippi and Caddyshack. He's very bald now. You might know him from other movies like Frozen River and Michael Clayton. When he's that disrespectful CIA guy and he enters in, you're like, okay, I know instantly just from his body language, he's a sexist, he's a office politic guy, he's not going to respect her authority at all, even though she is his superior. And she's, kudos to them casting Claire Danes, you know.
She's great.
Most people might have seen her, you know, soap opera show back in the day, My So-Called Life, or you might have seen you know, Romeo and Juliet. I knew a lot of her obscure kind of movies like Brokeback Palace and Terminator 3 and
like
Shop Girl with Steve Martin. But she kind of reminds me of Helen Mirren on Prime Suspect. She's just somehow able to echo, maybe even Carter Sedgwick on the closer, just that body language of just like,
well, she has a very good commanding presence and knows how to play the room, especially when she has to seduce somebody.
Yes.
Right. And then the next scene is she's having a full on breakdown and you're like, that's the same person.
Oh, and kudos to the filmmakers, too. They hired some cinematographers from Breaking Bad. So that kind of gives you the same kind of claustrophobic.
Yeah. But I do think I was listening to the audiobook of Miriam Margulies, who played the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, to Claire's Juliet, and she has no filter. So she was talking about making Romeo and Juliet, and she goes, years later, all I can remember is that Claire was always this very sweet girl who had a huge crush on Leonardo DiCaprio, and he was like, I didn't know what to do with her, so he kind of ignored her. But she was always quite professional, very sweet. And it's weird to watch her on Homeland. And even years later, after I watched it at a restaurant, Claire Danes came up to me and said, I don't know if you remember this, but we used to work in a movie together. My name is Claire. She's like, of course I remember who you are. And she's like, that is one of the rare types where you see no ego in it. I've heard Carol Burnett is one of those too. And I was like, oh, that makes me so happy.
Right. Because we get so disillusioned when we're like, they're great on screen, but to the makeup person or assistant director, they're, you know,
or, you know, they have this ego, like, I'm the best in my profession.
You can't tell me otherwise.
And she has apparently not really any of that. And she really has a good way. even though the show has its problems, and that was something I wanted to
all of them
bring
do.
Up, that, but as far, and I would say that when it comes to the acting on that show has always been top notch. It's yep. really the writing that has gotten a lot of criticism.
Yeah, no, we'll get into it.
Yeah, so, and but the acting is great. And it was just nice to know that, like, the main lead of Homeland, I don't remember if she ever won an Emmy, but she definitely deserves
some noms.
She got noms, but I don't know if she won. But she, it shows you her talent, because she can be unassuming, yep. especially when she's, like, in the Middle East and she's hiding and she has to look like an unassuming, just a woman, so that she's not bringing attention to herself. I just remember she always, like, steals, like, a scarf to wrap her hair around or something like that. And I'm like, I always want to do that. Like, go to a crowded bazaar and steal.
I was so going to ask you this, because my mom grew up on a military base in Iran.
Oh, and really?
One critique she had is, like, I don't think anyone would last too long if they, you know, they weren't covering up their hair with a perka.
Well, I think after the revolution, yeah, in the 1979, for sure. But
I get it was a different time, but it was just interesting.
It was a different time, but every time seeing those kinds of cool things, and it's so cool. And then she can be tough. She's really good at the interrogation room.
Yeah.
And then when she has her breakdown, because the character Carrie has bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty severe case.
And she's having to cover it up just to show she's so competent. Yeah. Imagine that scariness, just showing, hey.
And it's genetic. We know her dad had it.
Mm-hmm. And kudos to all the actors playing her dysfunctional family. Man.
Everyone is so good as the actors. They really had top-notch actors in it. It's just... And I still find it very entertaining, but I know many people who cannot watch that show because the plot is so weird and it can be quite racist. It can be quite offensive towards mental illness, all sorts of stuff. And
it's
I lived in Washington.
With a stereotype, especially with the shock therapy, which I don't think you can do anymore on many clinics.
Yeah. So I didn't know this because I don't read Arabic, but, they said anytime they film in what is supposed to be an Arab country, apparently, and I think they filmed in, like, maybe Turkey and South Africa or something like that.
I did see
that.
South Africa was one of the filmings.
Right. But they're like, oh, you have to make it look like it's graffiti and stuff. So people who read Arabic were saying, you know, it says Homeland is racist in the back. And if you look at it, I kind of Googled it and it's true. No one really fact checked it, and they knew they wouldn't, like, the local crew that was hired. And they're like, screw you. And they just kind of put it up there. And it was so weird and funny. It's probably season 4 is one of those seasons that does that.
That's the other problem, too. When you have so many filmmakers on set, they'll still try and sneak in an Easter egg or pull a prank. And it's like, someone's going to pick that up in the editing room.
But I do like that the show kind of moved on to other countries, particularly the last couple of seasons was Russia. Yeah.
Keep it fresh.
I think there was
instead
a couple
of just...
other.
Because, like, all the shows we know and love, I mean, there's a big bad every season, but some of them are integrated. Like, you can't physically remove them. You know, like, one of the terrorists, I think, from season 4 later comes back. He's now wanted by another terror cell.
Yeah. And I will say I think season 1 is still one of the best seasons and shows on television or in television history, is what I really appreciated it is. So first season, we know that an American soldier has been turned.
He's an infiltrator now.
Yeah, and they don't know who it is, and then they find out that this man who was presumed dead for 8 years is back, and he has been kidnapped by basically what is Osama bin Laden, but Abu Nazir.
ISIS, yeah.
Or ISIS. At the time, it was still... ISIS wasn't really a terrorist group that was established just yet, but it was mostly like, oh, it was bin Laden, because they do reference like a 9/11 kind of event that Carrie didn't realize and all sorts of stuff. And also the actor who plays Abu Nazir, I forget his name, but he's an Iranian actor and he's very, very talented. And my thing.
Oh, which one?
Checking.
Wait, which one?
The guy who plays Abu Nazir. What was his name? He's really good. He's in a bunch of stuff. He's even in Veep. Let's see. Abu Nazir.
Oh, Naveed. Nagabad. Yeah, he had numerous roles on 24, so he's part of that family. Yes,
he's very, very good. Homeland actor. He's really good.
He is creepy with that tilted nose they give him on the makeup. Is like, whoa.
Nagabon. And he's really great. And you actually, again, spoilers, guys, but in those 8 years, we do find out, oh, America wasn't just a good guy. It was the bad guy, too.
Especially by the end of the show. Like, literally, they are giving each other a you-know-what just to just make each other go away. Is like, yeah, we'll give you some of our prisoners. We kind of done this with Russia.
The only one is that is the only ones that really suffer are the innocent.
Yeah.
Any citizenship. And which is very realistic to how it is in the real world. But we find out that while Brody was with Abu Nazir and he had to tutor Abu Nazir's son, and he becomes very close to his son.
And they never make any riddle about it. They're like, everything we're doing is legal. Can't get caught.
Yeah. But then you find out that American, like the vice president and the army and stuff, accidentally killed the school children, including Abu Nazir's son, and then hid it. Mm-hmm. So that no one in America or in the Western world or really anywhere else would know that the reason why a bunch of children died is because you fucked up. America fucked up.
And they're like, I hate to say it, definitely goes on more often than we care to admit. There's almost always something where.
And so you were like, what would you do as a, and Brody's like, you're right. The people that I was a soldier for America, but they're not honest organization either, you know, right? Like all sorts of stuff. And he starts kind of turning. My other thing that I really like though is the season, the pilot cliffhanger. She's like, he's a spy, he's been turned. And she realizes he's doing something with his fingers while he's on camera. And she thinks it's a messaging. It's like an SOS to the terrorist groups or whatever. And later on, soon we kind of find out, no, he has converted to Islam and he was nervous. So he was doing his prayers, right? They have to do a series of prayers and it was a way to count it.
And all the handlers of them are also interesting because they change. And I love how it's not even just, can we turn him back? Can we capture him? Can we get him to confess?
But also,
like, Saul is a total bastard. Like, he is an absolute do as I say, not as I do. And by the end of the show, he's basically Carrie's enemy, which sucks because how do you turn on your mentor?
But my thing was that just because he was Muslim doesn't mean he's the enemy. You know what I mean?
No. I just mean in that he's pretty much just going against Carrie. Even if she has a better answer, he's like, no, I like my plan better. And
that's the thing about Saul and Carrie. It was like a dysfunctional, like a toxic relationship.
And then she does have the best line. She's like, literally, get fucked, Saul. Get fucked.
but that was the thing that I really liked about Homeland is, okay, so Brody is now Muslim. That doesn't mean anything, though. That doesn't prove that he is
been nothing turned is same.
Or anything. You also have then Nazanin Beldoni or something, or the actress. She plays a Muslim. In season 2 or 3, she's introduced.
And, oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. You have those, you know, so you're like, exactly. There are ways that you can empathize with either places. You do start being like, no wonder Abu Nazir hates us. Right. We killed his son and like, you know, hit it and all sorts of stuff. And he's always, he thinks he's doing something right. And then the Americans think that they're doing something right, or I'll be specific.
It's hard to argue with American all these guys who are brainwashed, you know?
Yeah, and we're sort of talking about like how we're all brainwashed too. And the only ones who really suffer are the ones who are minding their own business, like children, or like that wedding in season four.
The ones who are doing their job pretty much get fired or tortured and killed.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's really well done of that show of like, honestly, just because you're American doesn't mean you're the good guy. Just because you're from the Middle East doesn't mean you're a bad guy, or from Russia, you're a bad guy, or whatever it is. Everyone thinks they're the good guy. And that's where the problem lies, where no one can really, you know, eat. And exactly like how Saul and Carrie want to work together and believe that they're the best team together, it really isn't.
Yeah, because literally every other season, she's getting threatened to be getting locked away or getting blackmailed by one of her team members. And it's already bad enough because she's got no support at her home life, no personal life. And then she and Brody are emotionally connected to each other. And then she's trying to turn him back. So it's like, man, no wonder.
Yeah.
Even before the bipolar sets in, like, she is having to have so many different identities. When she's, I think in a later season, we are jumping around, guys. I will put up a different plot synopsis and trim it down, but there's so much to go on. I mean, I was getting very angry when she was, the cops are trying to lock her up just because she's at a crime scene. And then
in season seven, I think it was.
I think so. Yeah. And they're acting because it came from the top, you know, it's the blue wall and everything. And they're having to act like she's the enemy. I'm like, oh my God, you guys made a shitty arrest. She's not the bad gal.
Yeah. Like, this really wouldn't be.
And there's so many protests that become riots. There's, basically any base she goes to, on your earlier point, the show does good at changing it up, because every other show we like, or, you know, or don't like, their issue is that they kind of just revert back to who's going to be the big bad this season, and that's it. And they at least change the setting, kudos to head, you know, showrunners, Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza. They absolutely, Gordon was, you know, at that point, wanted to avoid any mistakes he had made on his earlier show, 24. He brought along a lot of his same writing staff, Chip Johansson, Patrick Harbinson, Manny Cotto, and if any of those names sound familiar, they've worked on just about everything, X-Files, you know, Lost, Buffy shows, and Leslie Linka Glatter directed and produced a bunch of episodes. She's one of the heads on like the Directors Guild now. And if you look at her credits, includes ER, The Morning Show, everything. Michael Cuesta is another one who's kind of been the go-to now for just casual political thrillers. A lot of them starring Jeremy Renner, as well as Naveed. Deborah Kahn, they brought in the later seasons. She was best known for working on The West Wing. So I think that's why they got a similar kind of structure, the walk and talk approach. And Claire Danes also, you know, was one of the executive producers, so she definitely had a say in her character journey. I was mainly impressed by Clark Johnson directing a bunch of episodes. If that sounds familiar, he's an actor turned director. A lot of his work includes The Shield, but he brought along Henry Brommel and James Yoshimura, who are best known for their work on Homicide: Life on the Street. If you don't know that one, that's where Detective Munch from Law & Order SVU was first introduced.
Oh,
rest
nice.
In peace. But same kind of deal. Just, it was known for its interrogations. More people were kind of watching again.
Okay. You know,
all the other procedurals. But that's what introduced the world to Andre Braugher. And the DVDs are worth buying. Yeah, you'll literally get hooked. And you're like, why is this not on streaming? This is a good show from the 90s.
Yeah.
But I feel like they pretty much use a lot of their same elements, but then they hit even deeper. And kudos to Gordon for also saying that Showtime pretty much left them alone after the pilot, to where they weren't pressured to add any gratuitous content, which is very rare, because almost all those channels are like, hey, we need more violence and sex.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, you guys can do what you want. So, okay, well, we're not going to have endless, you know, torture and all that other stuff. So,
right. Did you ever watch the SNL skit about Homeland? It's one of my favorites.
I didn't know there was one. Was it, what was season?
With Anne Hathaway playing Carrie.
I definitely saw her on one of those.
Bill Hader is Saul, and he's like, you gotta let her go in. She's only disappointed me every time I've trusted her.
Oh or my something God. Like that.
And then it's really funny because it's when Brody is still there and his daughter like ends up in the CIA thing, and she's like, Dad, where are you, Dad? And they're like, how did the daughter get in here? Because the daughter was always involved in some way. It's oh my so God. Funny. I rewatched it.
Part of that. I think it was just, I'm looking at the thumbnail. It was like a blink and a miss. It was like,
yeah. And then my favorite is that they're like, oh, she has to put on jazz and kind of mix up her medication to figure out some things.
I did see that skit. I just didn't know what they were referencing. Like,
it was Homeland. It was so good. And I knew exactly what they were doing and all the references. It
that's
was,
great.
It's really funny. But I think one of the problems, I don't know if it was just they didn't do enough research or
research.
Something.
What's that? I'm just kidding.
I know. Well, because the other big thing is there's a couple of things about where they talk about mental health.
Yeah.
Where that are portrayed correctly. And Homeland is always on the bottom of the list because they're like, you know, one of the biggest things is whenever she's off her medication, and it happens at least once every other season, if not almost all the seasons, she's like, I have to take off, like stop taking my medication so I can figure out this case. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, that's not how mental illness works.
That's, you know, the other thing. They can't tell the difference between health versus illness. I still think
kind of like they're like, and so then you're just saying she's really good at her job because of her illness. But then as soon as you figure out the thing, you need to get her back right on her medication and give her electroshock therapy, which is what happens. And she'll be good as brain, you know, like, and they're like, that's not how it works. And all sorts of stuff. The other big thing is I lived in Washington, D.C. for like 5 years. And not one person in DC likes that show.
Oh, I bet.
First of all, there is no way in hell she would have ever gone into the CIA, remotely to the CIA, with that kind of secret. We would have found out, and no way we would have hired her.
But to be fair, you know, a lot of these guys hate any TV shows. They hate it if you reference the West Wing.
They kind of do, but it's true. I was like, also. Her sister and her father hide her secret, and her sister is a psychiatrist or something. And they're like, that is illegal. You can't be doing that. Like, well, you know, being your sister's doctor for mental health for something like bipolar disorder. And we're like, no one's going to get this would be, she would be, there would be charges on this kind of thing.
And I bet.
So it was just, it always went just a bit far reaching, as well as good as it can get. It also went really wackadoodle when it came to how they would just explain stuff.
I think it's better than Criminal Minds, though. Because half the time,
Criminal Minds.
Well, that was the reason Patinkin left that show and came to this one.
Oh, because they were just, I think he was like, oh, all they do is just keep raping women.
No, it's just getting inside the mind of the profiler and having to think like the criminal and outwit them.
Uh-huh.
But
got it.
It had at least two seasons, which I could not get through. They were just really bad. But my issue was they definitely do a lot of the same deal where they can't tell the difference between a mental illness and a mental health. And sometimes they would just have a cop-out ending where the serial killer just blows his brains out. I'm like, no.
Right.
Arrest him or have him killed. Don't have him get a chicken way out and make us wonder why we wasted 40 minutes watching this mystery.
Yeah, they're like, we've got to finish this up.
Like, they would do it like for most of one season, and I was like, okay, sit those writers down.
Yeah,
it's not working.
That's so true. Yeah, so it's kind of like, I get it. But when it comes, like, Criminal Minds, I think, is like a 24 episode per season, right?
With little yes and no. I felt like 24, as bad as it could get at times.
No. I meant like they have 24 seasons per, or 24 episodes per season, and it's CBS.
Like that.
Like the show 24, about 24 hours, is also 24 episodes per season, and it was on Fox. So they had a tight, like they had to get stuff done. Homeland was on Showtime, which was about 10 to 12 episodes per season. So you didn't have that same excuse of like, we just have to get the, like, close this story.
We don't have to have any filler. And
right. Especially when they had a little bit more freedom when Showtime was like, whatever, I really like your pilot. So it's that's the frustration of it.
Writer
and
Zangst.
I think one of the reasons why I keep going back to it, though, is truly the acting. And I do appreciate that what we were discussing before is just because you're Middle Eastern doesn't mean you're the enemy. Just because you're American doesn't mean you're the good guy. Blah, blah, blah. All those stuff. If you can take away the other elements that kind of exaggerate everything else, which SNL does a really great job. And they're like, oh no, she's crying. And her whole face, when her whole face freaks out, that's when we know we can't control her or something like that. You know, like, yeah, it's ridiculous how they keep going back to those tropes. But
I thought it was better than Ray Donovan, though, where they keep traveling between New York and L.A. and in like
in the later seasons.
Well, yeah, like 4 hours. Yeah. And you're like, not how any travel works.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, it doesn't take. Like, what did you take, the Concorde, you know? But that's true. And
I mean, we like this better than, I guess, formulaic like superhero kind of stuff where it's going to just have 10 more follow ups. And I go by the Police Academy rule, where you stop after part 7. It's no longer fresh.
Rupert Friend, who played awesome Peter Quinn, he was like, you guys need to kill my character off. Like, what are you doing?
I didn't know that. That's wild.
He goes through so much, and he was like, yeah, they keep bringing me back, which is nice to have
a job. The season
where he's
in the hospital was pretty unpleasant. And it's just like, you know, where are these weird characters he's hanging out with? That's,
he's like,
I felt like I'm watching something
me?
Else.
Yeah, it was weird. And then he finally dies, and we're like, you poor thing needs to die. Like,
and then the next season starts, and you kind of forget it, and then you're like, oh, that's right. Quinn did die in that car explosion, saving Madam President Elizabeth Keane.
Was it like season 6 and then season 7?
And it's just one of those gotcha moments. But kudos to them for going more for kind of mystery, because there's drama, there's action,
yeah,
and there's crime stuff, but it's kind of interspersed. It's less about the so-called ticking clock, and kind of more of kind of liars spotting the bigger lie, the bigger elephant in the room. Especially with the video propaganda.
Well, one of my things is, you know, with all these like shows coming back, I feel like, do you think Homeland in 10, 15 years would ever come back? Because I think it was one of the better series finales.
I would see a movie of it. I don't know if, I mean, kudos to them,
like,
for also
Franny
kind of
is getting into the CIA.
I think just more Carrie decides to kind of just help a bunch of just other people overseas, kind of like Angelina Jolie and Salt. Different kind
of popcorn. That could be a good one. It's just, I really liked how they ended it. It was bittersweet.
It was never like The Equalizer or Burn Notice, where it's campy and it's just, they get someone out of a pickle. And it's like, no, like, that every time someone's on the phone, like, you're seeing realistic stuff. Like, I'm running out of battery power, or someone just took my phone. Good luck finding me, you know? Or this guy, the weapons dealer I'm using, he's just been killed by, you know, police. I got, you know, abort. I got to go see my second contact. And apparently the incompetent replacement president that they have replaced Beau Bridges' character in the last season, they were aiming for Trump on that one. And I thought they did a good job.
What happens in season 8?
Remember Beau Bridges, president?
Is president.
He takes over for Elizabeth Keane. And if anything,
she steps down.
She steps down. He's like the temporary replacement one. And I would actually like to show the finale of season 7 to people just to get them hooked, just because that rescue is just like, you lose your breath every time you're watching that particular one. And I love how he's telling all these other guys, get the fuck out of my seat.
It's
like, I did this as a favor to the party, not to be your scapegoat, not to be your puppet.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's so hard to keep track of how many...
It's too much, yeah.
...characters are there and all that. I remember when I was looking, I'm like, oh, I forgot this actor's in it, and I forgot this was happening, and I forgot
Timothy Chalamet's like a terrorist suspect in this, and people...
Yeah.
I saw people hating on him because they didn't like a certain bunch of movies he was in. I'm like, well, he was good on Homeland. That's all I knew.
Yeah. They went to Germany at some point.
Germany.
Great German actors in it.
Yeah.
It's just, it is hard. It is 8 seasons, and it's not like Friends was 10 seasons, and Friends, you knew the setting, you knew who was going to be what, doing what. Homeland is not one of those.
No.
Right? You're like, when are they in Pakistan? When are they in Germany? When are they in Russia? When is Abu Nazir around? When is he dead? When is he... You can't keep track of these things.
Well,
and that's... Yeah.
And the 2010s was kind of a mixed bag where people were still unsure if they were going to stick with streaming versus cable.
That's true.
So
yeah.
I think like Breaking Bad and Suits and all those other shows, I think everyone was kind of like, hey, I like it, but I got to save money because... Yeah, bills to pay.
Yeah, and it was like when things were sort of, it wouldn't be a huge hit right away. It wasn't until it would get onto a streaming platform and then people would binge watch it.
Game of Thrones, all those other ones.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, it was around that, that
but
time.
But Friends, that's a good point, because Friends and Seinfeld kind of invented the whole, even if you don't know a season, you know a certain outrageous subplot. Is that the episode where so-and-so plays a prank on and it's like... Yeah.
Or even something like 24, because it's contained into that same day, you're like, this is still Los Angeles. This is still
There's no way he's getting a nuclear weapon
or something, you know?
My favorite season is the one where he disarms a bomb. Oh, wait. That's all.
I was like, with my favorite season is season 3 with Chase, and he has to like cut off the bomb on Chase's arm. Remember that? That's
oh
what I thought.
God.
You said disarm the bomb. I'm like, mine too. Oh wait, no, hold on.
And then the president's having to get his hands dirty, and he's like, "Damn it, brother! There's no way you're running for public office
David Palmer,
with all this dirt you're giving me." And then, lo and behold, he runs for office.
Yeah, wasn't it the original your podcast was like going in a deep dive on 24, right?
We did originally, along with some of the other space operas and horror anthologies, and it was just interesting how, like, just summing that up, I mean, Homeland only has like maybe particulars where they're like years apart or 3 months later. Yeah, 24 was very specific. It's like, okay, 3 years later, okay,
yes,
5 months later, but wait, what? Oh.
yeah, it was tough. But they said it was like hell to try and keep track of it, but they did a good job because you never noticed if the tie was disheveled because they actually filmed it 8 months
and it's
apart.
Not in one day, so it's like
yeah,
okay.
And all sorts of stuff. But But again, it's a little easier to keep track of versus something like Homeland. It's so, there's so many characters. There's too many countries.
Oh, totally. I'm glad they had Brody come back like way later, just as a kind of a parallel to things have gotten worse now that you're gone. They were bad.
When did he come back?
It was like a vision later on, I think, in one of the final seasons.
That she sees?
I think
like
so.
Like in prison,
yeah.
Right? She's in prison.
I believe so, yeah. And this is like, yeah, she just fills
things
the
are
spirit.
Coming back to me.
I thought that was an interesting kind of throwback for longtime fans who were patient and showing,
yes.
Hey,
because I was one of those. So many people left the show when Brody died, and I'm like, no, dude, it still gets good.
Fortunate enough, someone spoiled that for me. And one thing I notice, and it's with all the ones, the gangster shows, the cop shows, the doctor shows, people who are attached to just one cast member often aren't very open-minded. They just want to rely on just one person to support it. And I'm like, well, if that's the story that they intended and it wasn't meant to be a cheap reaction, you know, I think you can let it go. It's not, this is meant to be a bigger sum of its parts than you're making it. Because what I'll also notice is those same fans will also complain if nothing new happens. It's like, so what do you want? We're damned if you do, damned if we don't. What do you want?
It's tough. And I've in more power to showrunners, because that's their job, and it's to try and please everyone.
Yeah.
Especially once you get a loyal fan base.
Thank God they didn't change up this room. They just kept using the same guys. It's like, okay, you're going to pitch the cutthroat senator who's working with the terrorists this year. You're going to pitch the finale. And they're following a lot of what my screenwriting professors were talking about. It's like, as long as you outline, you're good to go. Instead of, I'll just make up with it on the spot. I think it just helps that it's not really relying on the shock value as much.
Because
like, you see other shows where it takes a while to decipher whether you're a fan of the show or you're just one of those guys who's just watching it for the demented content, you know? I do this all the time when I see people talk about shows like Sopranos or Oz. It's like, well, did you actually like it, or were you just watching it because it was naughty? Why were you watching
it? Or like everyone wouldn't shut up about it, and you were like, oh.
I was like, do you like it or not? It's a simple question.
Yeah.
They're the same kinds of guys who will, I don't know, watch something like Silence of the Lambs or Terminator, but they're just watching the mindless violence. I'm like, well, you can watch it that way, but like The Godfather is a bigger side to this. Now, if you think it's overrated, then I don't even know why we're having this conversation.
Right. Or like they're like, I just wanted to cross it off my list to say I've done it. Like,
isn't that interesting too? I mean,
and I'm like, no, that's you're ruining.
If I hate a movie, I will sit through it all just to say I did see it, but I'm still gonna analyze. Okay, didn't
but
care
then
for
we're
this.
But we're geeks, so we take it seriously. Like, there's that really great question. A couple of podcasts asked. They're like, what's a film that you've never seen that you're ashamed to admit you've never seen?
See, I don't think you should be ashamed of
that.
And
people will say like The Godfather or this or something like that, and you're like, you've never seen The God. Mine is always mostly like Christmas movies. What is it, Miracle on Some Sort of Street or something?
You know,
I don't feel shame for it.
I don't.
And for a while, A Christmas Story was one of those that I've never seen, and then I watched it last year, and I'm like, this is nauseating. This is not for me. I'm so happy you guys love it, but it's not for me.
Well,
absolutely not.
And newsflash, half these so-called classics were hated back then.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. So, like,
what is a classic?
Yeah, that's the tough part, you know?
5 years from now, it's going to be on the overrated movies of all time list or some other clickbait. So I didn't care for it growing up, but my parents liked it, and I came around to it, and I was like, okay, I get it.
Well, like, for instance, in this past year, Barbie came out.
Yeah.
And I saw it opening weekend, and I'm like, oh, it's cute. It's nice. Next thing I know, it's the 11th most box office hit in film history, and everyone loves it. And oh my God, it's perfect. I'm like, calm down. It's really not that good.
That's my other problem, too. People will also go, I go more to Metacritic because Rotten Tomatoes had a recent scandal where they were like, hey, you know, some people were getting bought these last 5 years, but they go for so approximately, kind of like how these political conflicts on this show, they kind of go for the, they don't have any in-between portion, but I will see people, again, they'll look at the exact score. Oh, if it's below 40, I'm not watching it. I'm like, well, you might actually like it. It's just not for the mainstream crowd. Or, but
yeah,
a blockbuster like Mission Impossible 5 is like a 97%. I'm like, it should not be scored that high. It's not that kind of movie at all.
It's a fun movie, but is it 97%? What is 97%? You know?
Yeah. It's,
kind of thing.
That's telling me on average people gave it that rating, which makes me bug the question. I'm like, I guess it's okay for a blockbuster, mindless blockbuster movie, but
yeah,
I digress. I don't understand. I mean, because this could all change too. Like, you can keep adding or adjusting the score as it goes on to where it might come down, and I mean, much like many of these shows that are on long term, like Half the Dick Wolf and Ryan Murphy stuff, it's hard to even find an exact review of them. Some reviews I did see on here, fortunately, whenever I had to go to a recap, I was blessed that a lot of the reviewers were kind of big spy, political thriller, assassin movie fans. Because when I was recapping like Lovecraft Country and even doing a Yellowstone binge, I would see so many people just making very snobby remarks where it's like, it sounds like you don't even want to watch this show. these answers are not going to. Well, that, and I get that if that's your job, like if you're blogging and you just so happen to pick a show you don't care for, but like these guys came off as just very impatient, like, why don't they answer this? I'm like, because it's not going to be answered until 5 episodes later.
It's
serialized. This probably wouldn't have worked on regular TV. They probably would have just wanted too many explosions. I mean, there's an audience for everything, but they would have probably wanted this to be kind of more like Bones or NCIS, where we solve it at the end. It's standalone, and it's like, no.
Not a lot of this, like, again, going back to our original topic, like Homeland is not one of those.
It can't
where
be.
They thought they can just watch one episode and solve the case and you're done. No, it's not that.
Yeah.
So if it's not your jam, you don't have to watch it.
Absolutely not. And I mean, but I will admit this, having watched this with other family members, they would get very sick just watching it without there even being anything on screen. So kudos to the filmmakers. This is not, it's not a gruesome show, but it is mentally.
Oh, I was going to say, like, what was it that was tough on them?
Oh, just everything from, I think there's that later season where there's that other CIA traitor played by Miranda Otto, and she's covering up a body and making it look like, and then shooting herself like ligament just to make it look like someone else attacked her. And just the way it's done is rather gory, but it wasn't so much of what they saw as it was just, oh my god, what are they doing, you know? And there is sex on here, but it's not pornographic like some of those other shows often come across as. They're just but I mean, kudos to Marina Baccarin, who has the role as Mrs. Brody, where she's showing is like, hey, the chemistry between us is gone since you've come back. I don't trust you around my kids because you're having your PTSD moments and I don't know how to, you're not going to your meetings. So where are you going? You know,
with Carrie, baby.
This is a hard role for all these actors. I got to tip my hat to all of them, you know?
Yeah. Again, they're the best parts of the show. For sure. For me.
I can't think of any who I would recast or anything. What did you think of the one presidential advisor played by Linus Roach?
Oh, him. That's in quite a few seasons, right?
The last 3 seasons. I love how he has to like change his tune instead of being, because every other show we've seen that role, the chief of staff can often be a little shady or doing his own agenda.
And he was actually like a pretty decent character, but everyone used him.
Used him, and I love when he's talking to the incompetent final president. He's like, Mr. President, it's not how any of this shit works. So you better get your ass in line or you're going to get voted out. Because, but he wants to say that and he can't. And so he just steps in and he just steps to the other guys. He's like, we need a rescue party off the grid because everyone's jobs is on the line.
Yeah, it was this sort of...
He just left all these Marines to die, and this is not good.
Yeah.
I like how it doesn't go to war movie cliches, really, because I was worried about that. I was worried we were going to get an American flag with trumpets playing at one point. I'm like, I don't want any of that shit.
Yeah.
I do not want a recruitment ad in my entertainment.
Right. It was sort of... Yeah.
Like in season 4, you are angry that people are getting slaughtered at the CIA base, and at the same time it's kind of earned because everyone's so incompetent. They have let all this shit go behind them. They have not listened to Carrie.
Yes. Well,
always listen to Carrie is the main lesson you take away with.
I mean, that's what the show really is saying.
Yeah, cuz she's looking at everything from bank accounts to maps to advice, and they always go with, well, that's a good point, but we're not going to do that, or I don't want to, or I don't respect you, so fuck you. It's like, what?
Yeah. It's
weird. When you get a duly noted, guys, you're getting an insult, not a compliment.
Yeah. it's a great watch, though, guys. You should watch it.
Absolutely. Prepare to get mad. Prepare to make time in your busy life, because you won't be able to.
Well, the nice thing is, I think you can just binge watch it. I was watching it live. Like, I remember watching the pilot.
Oh, really?
And that was, like, it took time. And you're like, it's not doing really great. But it's like Stockholm Syndrome or something.
You do kind of get that vibe after a while. I mean, definitely between Brody and Carrie, they've kept each other... They literally have captured one another at one point, but they don't elongate it like half these other spy shows where they would rip off James Bond.
Yeah, which I appreciate.
It's not soapy, guys. Trust us. There's soap opera stars in this, but it's not.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, a soap opera can be good. They just often get a bad, label because often they got cheap production values and overacting. Right. But this is more, I mean, I would definitely rank this as a very intelligent, diehard kind of movie with a bit of the Bourne Identity stuff. You really, the dialogue sit downs are just as awesome as the intense, tactical team stuff.
Yeah,
especially the other guys who trust Carrie. I like some of those texts, especially David Marciano, the bald guy. You might know him from The Shield. I love how he's just like, I'm not gonna get in trouble, am I?
Yeah. Or the guy with the glasses, he's always so sweet.
Like, oh my god, he is like a borderline sociopath, whereas like he pretty much is like gets off on just like cynicism. Is like, the public will never know what happened. It's like, I'm sure there has to be someone that jaded, because this would this kind of job would totally eat you up if you were having to lie for a living and basically, you're worse than a federal agent or a detective. You're having to literally do these stakeouts that are dangerous. Yeah. You're not getting paid enough. You're not having any support half the time. Man.
Well, basically went through my notes of Homeland. Anything else?
I just recommend this to everybody. Just in general, I do. It's a good, like you say, deconstruction of how America isn't really America, how world peace is an illusion, how compromise is often a dirty thing to have happen just to just have it some kind of less violence. And it's just it's very good at circling in between all these different subplots without overwhelming you. I mean, because we've talked about other shows that had, infamous seasons before. We've talked about Prison Break, which is not realistic at all, but you can't take your eyes off it like a stupid action movie. And
it's like a fun ride, but like Homeland has a fun ride, but it still has that kind of realism. And
absolutely, it's not like all these other overrated blockbusters where you're like, but so what? It doesn't affect anybody. They're gonna come back without any bullet shells or damaged armor, and everyone here is very self-aware of how they can be damaged goods at times. And because, it's when it's starting off with a brainwashed, you know, soldier turned terrorist, and then starting with a gal, you know, who's bipolar and mm-hmm. not liked by anyone personally, friends or work colleagues, it, you instantly are on the protagonist's side just because she's having to basically find an unlikely friend just to help her out of every single mess. And the political stuff is also interesting because it doesn't go in the direction you typically think it will mm-hmm. be. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, hey, let's introduce a politician who's going to make a speech, often it's all behind the curtain stuff and they're like, no, he didn't. Fuck, what am I gonna have to do, you know?
Yeah,
and just very reactionary without feeling over scripted or cliche, because like you say, there are some stuff that could be better retcon, but it's overall the bigger picture, they in hindsight is pretty well thought out. It's just, yeah, don't binge this if you do not have any time, but if you do have the sweet time, please access it on all the streaming stuff. Oh, Tara's cat is invading the yes. conversation here.
She's like, yeah. It's my dinner time.
She's like,
where are you?
I must watch this show with Tara.
She dead.
Anyway. Awesome.
She's right at home.
I love having a tertiary guest. let's talk about your awesome show, because much like this show, you try to dissect everyone's backstory and how they got here, their bloodline, and unusual heroics. It's kind of, I don't know if you'd call it true crime, but it's definitely a great history podcast.
It's a history podcast. It's like a documentary podcast. I started Who Was She podcast, which is about women throughout history, particularly women who were Baha'is, so less than 200 years.
For anyone who wants to listen,
it's on Spotify. It's on all the major platforms. I host on Acast. They're really great. And it started because I had heard about the life of Lydia Zemanoff, whose father invented the language Esperanto. And she went and traveled through three continents between two world wars to promote this language, Esperanto. So that there would be this common, like an easy language that everyone can learn. It actually was really popular, particularly in Japan, for instance, because it was so simple. I got to learn it a bit, and it's kind of not as popular as it once was. But what was really interesting, I learned about her life, and she had multiple attempts to save her life during World War II. But ultimately, with like spies involved and someone who was a German soldier, but he was actually for the resistance, all sorts of stuff. It was like so cool. But ultimately, she does die in a concentration camp. And there were actually three times where I almost got it made into a film, but it fell apart. And because it's so difficult. And I went, you know what? I'm going to, and the book that I found, biography, is almost not discontinued, but it is kind of harder to find. Apparently it got re-released in Polish because she was of Polish descent, but the English version's not really able to be found. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put it into as a podcast. And I really enjoyed that process.
I can't blame you. That's kind of where I was with this podcast. I was working on a lot of stuff that never got off the ground. And now I'm finding that audio dramas are a great thing, too. They're being re-embraced.
It's picking up. Yeah.
They're not critically so many people ignored as they used to be.
Mm-hmm. And this audio. Yeah, exactly. And I met a couple, like, I went to some podcast conferences, and
I'm so glad you got to go to those. I'm going to have to try in the future. I just got the worst work schedule.
Yeah. And it's tough because it's like, I needed to wear compression socks. I was always on my feet meeting people in a week and stuff. It was, I went to the Podcast Movement Conference, which is one of the largest podcast conferences in the world. And it happens every year, and they change the location each year, usually in North America.
I applaud him for that, instead of just being like do or die, you know, like only here, only there.
So it was really cool. And I met like a couple of people who were not just these kinds of podcasts, which was like interview based. There's a lot of children podcasts.
Yeah. Multiple genres.
All sorts of stuff. And it was really cool to meet these people and how they're concentrating and what we're learning. Video podcasts is growing, which I feel like it defeats the purpose of it. But it's an interesting thing that people are like, you should not neglect it. And so some people I know that are in podcasting are looking into it. I work with other podcasters to get them guests and and all that stuff. So they are interested in doing more video. So we have to like rethink the contract and all sorts of stuff for their guests. But it's been really interesting. And it's still one of my favorite mediums.
I'm glad it's been turning out great. And I applaud you for being on an innumerable amount of film podcasts as well. Because you're learning about these cool cats who have also been around forever. And
yeah,
to give the bloodline of these historical figures a voice, actually get their side of it is, I applaud you for that, you know, because that's so much travel and, you know, hotel expenses.
I really like it. And we'll see how it goes. There's season three seasons for Of Who Was She? And there's going to be a season four coming out in 2024. But we'll see how it goes, because it is really pretty much 90% a one woman shot. But
hey, so I feel you. There's plenty of solo outings I do on here. Where it's like, right. Okay, no one else has read this book, so I'm going to have to sit down when I'm actually ready to make sense of what I'm
about. Yeah, I get it. But there's always an outlet. That's the thing about the internet. There's always something for someone.
And avoid the snobs online.
Yeah,
if
exactly.
They're just getting. There was this one guy who was kind of going around saying, I can market your podcast, and then not following it up. I'm like, okay, well,
okay,
I'm not taking his advice anymore.
Yeah. I get it.
A lot of talk, no promise fulfilled. I'm good. And if people are just, you know, cut off the people who are just poo-pooing you, there's some friends and other filmmakers I'm in groups with. And this year I just said, hey, I value my time. All I'm getting right now is like, what? Three out of 10 people are responding, and the rest are just giving smart ass replies or sharing memes, but not actually engaging. I'm going to pick a different group to be in.
I get that. Yeah.
Just anything that's just irking you, giving you anxiety, avoid, you know, just
avoid it. Yeah, exactly. And
get some sleep on it.
Yeah. So, but hopefully this is one of those podcasts that keep you happy and entertain you, and yeah, I always have fun coming on, so thank you for having me.
The previous TV podcast you had with some other friends was also awesome. I don't know if you ever can
so I'm a co-producer and a co-host for Media and Monuments podcast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a screen-based anyone who's in screen-based media, we talk to location managers for film sets. We've talked to editors. We've talked to YouTubers and influencers, all sorts of stuff, because you do tend to just kind of hear about an actor or maybe the director or maybe the screenwriter.
But not the
name. Right. But you never really understood. You're like, you know, there was somebody who did the cinematography for that. Right.
Yep.
And the sound engineering for that. Right. And all that. And so it's really been cool to learn from those. So Media and Monuments. Season four is ending now, and we're working on season five, and it's one of those that are looking into video podcasting. Mm-hmm. So I have to beautify myself when I get on.
Woo!
But it's been really great. And we got to talk to the Gina Davis Institute of, it's like media research. And we spoke with Blockbuster. You know, like all these things about media, and not just the filmmakers, but people who are involved in filmmaking. And we spoke with authors who talk about how books are translated into films, where it goes right, where it can go wrong, all that kind of stuff. So it's been really fun.
Oh, well, and you got a perfect radio voice, I think, for it. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah. And you're very just forthcoming on, it's like, yeah, this irked me, you know, politically or socially, but this might work for this kind of crowd. And with the interviews, it's very awesome just kind of seeing you kind of get these guys making rare appearances to just kind of come out of their shell. They're not used to just sharing stuff they've known all their lives.
You know? Right. And I'm still talking to people who I'm be like, you do all the premieres for a streaming platform, like all those. They're like, yeah. And like, do you want to be on a podcast? They're like, no, I don't like people knowing what I do.
That's the other thing too. It's really, yeah, I do this with like family too. They're like, tell me more. I'm like, what I'm about to say will be gibberish to you. This person doesn't follow or
but they're also really great contacts, and they're like, let me think of people who wouldn't mind telling you. I'm like, because I think it's important for people to understand what it takes to host a huge premiere for The Crown. You know,
out of 20 people, you might find four who are that exact wired the same way. Yeah. It's like, okay, they got what I just said.
So, but it's been really cool, and I really enjoy it. And so Media and Monuments and Who Was She podcast are my two main podcasts that I work on. And then I help with people getting on other podcasts as a booking agent. And it's been really nice to work with people.
I'm glad you can do that kind of hustle and meet all these wonderful talents.
Yeah. So
I'll make you a tarot, I'll make you a star.
I'll make you a star. Just call me David O. Selznick or something. I don't know. I can't remember who was like those big star wigs, but
one of those famous, yeah, old school.
But it's been cool, and just learning about things and still being creative, because it is hard to get things made.
So much.
And when you have that creativity, but I'm finding a way, and I'm really happy with it.
I wish you the best, and the world is your oyster.
Thank you.
We will link again. I've been getting better at putting all this stuff in the show notes. I'm gonna be doing that on this episode. Again, you've heard it from the gal herself, Tara Jabari, can be found on Instagram, Twitter, now known as X. Hit her up with just some cool life story.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. If you guys have any ideas, let me know.
She'll give you her awesome lowdown on it. Very courteous, very energetic, very all about just the unknown stories, even stuff that you didn't know was unknown. You know?
Thank you so much. And yeah, anytime. And go watch Homeland.
Yes, and watch another show waiting to be unearthed again. Watch the hit show that Showtime doesn't even realize was a hit.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All righty. Godspeed everyone out there. Thank you for listening, and wish nothing but the best.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show. Jacked Up Review Show.